Coming up on Simply Superior.
Simply Superior, news and issues from a superior point of view.
You are about to enter the courtroom.
You've met Judge Judy, Judge Wapner, and Judge Joe Brown.
The cases are
now, meet Judge Sean.
When I make a decision from the bench, or I always try to explain where I'm coming from.
And if you missed him, former Judge Sean.
The thing that still strikes me and is still unfolding is just the amount of trauma that's coming through the judicial system.
Plus, if you want to go camping and take in a multitude of bands and a little squash, it's happening in Foxborough this weekend. Those stories and the regional news and review after this.
Simply Superior, news and issues from a superior point of view.
You are about to enter the courtroom.
You've met Judge Judy, Judge Wapner, and Judge Joe Brown.
The cases are
now, meet Judge Sean.
When I make a decision from the bench, or I always try to explain where I'm coming from.
And if you missed him, former Judge Sean.
The thing that still strikes me and is still unfolding is just the amount of trauma that's coming through the judicial system.
Plus, if you want to go camping and take in a multitude of bands and a little squash, it's happening in Foxborough this weekend. Welcome to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. If for whatever reason you've had your day in court, and that's hopefully by your choice and not somebody else's, you may have found yourself in Minnesota's 6th Judicial District Courthouse in Duluth. That could be true even if you live on the Wisconsin side of the bay, if the activity you were involved in happened on the Minnesota side. And if that appearance happened in the last few weeks, you may have been in the courtroom of Judge Sean Pearson. But if it happened before that, it also could have been Judge Sean, that's Sean Flurkey, who left the bench and become head of the Duluth Superior Area Community Foundation. Both Seans join me now, and since they spell their names a little differently, I'll let them explain which is which. Welcome to Simply Superior, Sean and Sean.
Thanks, Robin. Good to be here. This is Sean Flurkey. Spell with a U. S-H-A-U-N.
And this is Sean Pearson, spelled with a W.
Uh-huh. By process of elimination, I think we have both of you.
Thanks for having us, Robin. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, it's awesome.
So the Minnesota 6th Judicial District is pretty large geographically. It consists of Carlton, Cook, Lake, and St. Louis counties. What percent of the people appearing in the court come from Wisconsin? I'm wondering if Sean Flurkey, you might be more familiar with this. And I would
yeah,
say
I wouldn't have exact data, but yeah, there's a pretty porous back and forth between Wisconsin and Minnesota. So yeah, you see folks through all the time from Wisconsin and beyond.
Mm-hmm. And I would say the one time I made it to jury selection, but I did not make it on a jury when I was called for jury duty. That exactly was the case. Somebody told me, by the way, once we knew who you were, a fellow, a potential juror, he said, once we knew about your journalism background, we knew this guy's never going to be on. But anyway.
Really? I don't think that's true. I don't think that's true at all.
I don't think it's true either. Yeah.
No.
Yeah? Well.
No. I've been amazed that, you know, I've had lawyers on juries sit through, police officers. Yeah, it all depends on who's there.
Mm-hmm. I will say,
I completely agree with you. I mean, I think generally we like thoughtful individuals who listen, you know, and it doesn't surprise me at all, you know, that Sean Flurkey would have the same opinion as to have having a journalist on a jury.
Mm-hmm. Maybe you have a reputation for being unthoughtful.
Well,
I mean, who knows?
I will say
Denny
this.
Denny Anderson. Do you remember Denny Anderson? He's still around, you know.
Yeah, everybody remembers Denny. Yes, right. Be kind.
He was on a jury for a crime that he reported on. He went, and it was a murder. He went there the night of the murder to the location and reported, and then was ultimately on the jury months and months and months later. And this is a long time ago, but yeah, you never know.
Well, I do have to say, so I was in Judge Munger, Mark Munger's court, and his first question to me on voir dire was, do you know anyone in a courtroom? To which I said, well, I know you.
Right.
And
right.
And then I also knew the defense lawyers, and it was a civil case.
Yeah.
And by the way, it was indeed half of the party was Wisconsin. It was a traffic situation, and it happened on the can of worms. And the chances of somebody being from Wisconsin are pretty great on there. But anyway, it was a fellow juror who had the impression that I would not survive. And maybe it was my thoughtfulness or my clever answers to who I knew or something like that. Well, this conversation. Well,
Robin, this is Sean Pearson. I wanted to decode a term that you just used, voir dire, which is the process of jury selection. I love that you know that term. I definitely want the listeners to know what that is. And it's a good kind of topic to even talk about, because we want a good cross-section of the population to be getting called for jury duty and to report for jury duty. It's a great way to get involved and to be an engaged citizen. So it's really our civic responsibility.
Mm-hmm. And well, and I did. I surveyed... And we're just taking over this conversation. This is talking. I don't know what Robin has for questions.
No.
You just go right ahead.
I handed out a survey at the end of every jury trial. And one of the questions was essentially, did you find it rewarding? Would you recommend it to the friends or family? And almost without exception, there was maybe a very small handful almost 17 years of doing it, reported that it was very satisfactory, that they felt honored and they really appreciated and understood the gravity of what it meant to sit on a jury. I was always deeply impressed with jurors and the kind of seriousness they brought to the process.
Well, I can tell you in hindsight, I would have brought that gravity had I been selected, but I was not. And yes, maybe it's my thoughtfulness or simply my answers or whatever. Knowing everybody in a courtroom probably doesn't help. But in any case, we are speaking with, or I'm trying to, Sean Flerke, former judge for the 6th District of Minnesota and now the president of the Duluth Superior Area Community Foundation, which we also want to talk about in this conversation, if I get a chance to ask a question.
Yeah, how long you got,
Sean,
man?
Sean Pearson, his successor on the bench for the 6th District. So one of you was appointed by a Democratic governor, Governor Walz, that would be you, Sean Pearson, and one by a Republican, Governor Pawlenty, I believe. Does that matter? Yeah. What difference does that make? I mean, people make a big deal about this, and obviously on the federal and Supreme Court level, it matters hugely. But in the local courts, what's the difference?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, each governor brings their own philosophy, right? And so I think, people can look at a governor and say, this is the way they lean, this is the way they think, this is who they tend to pick, whether it's prosecutors, defense, otherwise. But none of that matters much the day you start. You got to do the work and show up and treat people well and be smart and work hard. So it's an interesting question. I guess in the state court, I guess I don't know that I met a lot of judges who I could immediately tell who appointed them.
Mm-hmm. Sean Pearson, your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I would like to think that the political party of the governor who appoints the state district court here doesn't have a great deal to do with the individual being selected. Just having recently gone through the process, there's a number of criteria that all of us have to meet to get through, various levels of scrutiny up until the point that three candidates get to the governor. That process has already been very well vetted by tens of people. And so by the time it gets to that point, it's an interview, and it's not even just a one-on-one interview with the governor. It's a panel interview. So that's the process, really. So, I like to hope that it doesn't have anything to do with it, actually. But I completely agree with Sean Flerke that once you hit the ground, it has nothing to do with it at all.
You got to do the work. Yeah. Well, and I don't know how Wisconsin does it. This is flirky talking. I mean, Minnesota has a statewide selection commission. It's 9 people appointed from cross sections with lawyers and non-lawyers, 4 local representatives in each district. So you're going through a panel of 13 people, lots of backgrounding, lots of reference calling, secondary reference calling, random reference calling, tax records, professional responsibility. There's a pretty good vetting. I mean, it isn't, it's a thoughtful, involved process, not just a one-off, who knows a governor.
Oh, shucks. I guess I'll stop introducing myself to governors.
Yeah.
Yes. This is assuming I want this job, which I think you guys may give me more advice on that, too. Sean Pearson, what's been your biggest paradigm shift, misconception, revelation since you got sworn in?
Yeah, I think it's really the surprises of volume of cases that come through the courts. I think, your normal person walking down the street who might engage in the court process, a few times in their lifetime, probably wouldn't have much of an idea about the number of cases that we handle. And we try to give them the time and attention that they need and whatnot, of course. But I think the biggest paradigm shift is really just how deeply you can have an impact on individuals' lives and how few those opportunities are sometimes when you're handling that number of cases. But what I'm really hoping is that I continue to keep learning about those types of opportunities where you can really help people get to a better place in their lives. Because those opportunities are sometimes few and far between.
Mm-hmm. Sean Flurkey, what was your biggest revelation or, again, misconception dispelled when you first got on the bench?
I'll echo. I mean, it's the volume. It's compared to drinking from a fire hose. You have to learn and listen. The scariest type of judge is one who knows everything, comes in and has it all figured out and is just ready to teach everybody what they know. Clearly not. You can tell in 3 minutes of talking to Sean Pearson, not his approach at all. But it's a constant learning. I think of all the things I've learned, first year, 10th year, whenever, you just have to listen and be open and be teachable. The thing that still strikes me and is still unfolding is just the amount of trauma that's coming through the judicial system and the challenges of how to care for and echoing Judge Pearson, how to move people forward into better places. And then also how to live through the vicarious trauma of those impacts of day in and day out, those stories, those harms, those really tough situations that takes a toll on anybody involved. So,
You mean
those are the
keeps you up at night, sometime after?
I'm a pretty good sleeper, Robin. But yeah, and it just, most everyone's heard the concept of vicarious trauma and that we mirror other people. And I don't think you get out of really, really hard, tragic situations without having an impact. It's so you've got to learn how to take care of yourself, how to rest, how to rejuvenate, how to keep hope alive, how to stay involved, not isolate. There's a lot that goes into the job in that regard.
Mm-hmm.
I tell my people now, geez, we've got good problems. You should have seen the problems I had back then. And it's totally true.
Well, I'm going to take that opportunity to ask you about those good problems we are speaking. Oh, you thought you were going to get away with
switched
it.
Switched his sights.
That's right. We are speaking with Sean Flurkey, the former judge in the 6th Judicial District of Minnesota, who is now the president of the Duluth Superior Area Community Foundation. And we're also speaking with Sean Pearson, who is Sean Flurkey's successor. So, having introduced us to the easier, well, no, you didn't say easier. What was the phrase?
I didn't say easier. I said they were nicer problems.
The nicer problems of the community foundation. Yeah. And I will point out, as a former trustee of the foundation, it serves the community, the broader community, all the way from the Range and Two Harbors, which has its own dedicated fund, to Duluth Superior, of course, and Madden Island, which also has its own dedicated fund.
Yeah, over to the Apostles, Bayfield, Ashland. Yeah, we're 7 counties in Minnesota and 3 in Wisconsin.
So just like I asked Sean Pearson about what's been his great revelation over the last few weeks, how about you with the Community Foundation?
Well, one of the challenges is taking over as Zoom boss and Zoom leader, that lack of in-person connection. I think we're getting past it in terms of connection. But I've been so deeply struck and impressed. I don't think surprised is the right word, but the depth and breadth of what we do. I mean, Robin, from being a trustee, we're involved in so many different things and so many good things. And that's exciting to me. And then thinking about what's the future? What is there? There's huge questions in terms of philanthropy's role going forward, and pandemic has broken things open and exposed things that folks have not seen or not wanted to see for a long time. Inequality, climate, community development, housing, access, barriers, opportunity gaps. So I'm excited to learn more and try and be part of really addressing future community. Mm-hmm. How do we hold space in a way that boys and girls in our community do better and better going forward?
Well, to dig slightly deeper on that, how do you say no to good causes?
That's the question, isn't it? The way you say no to good causes is by developing a clear strategic vision. And you are spot on. If you are everywhere, you're nowhere. So yes, exactly. And if you ask me what my strategic vision is right now, I will tell you I'm too new in the job and I'm only one person and I've got a board of trustees and I've got advisory boards and I've got a team of good people. So we're going to enter into strategic planning with a framework mindset that we can then say yes to yes and no to no. You're spot on. You know that. You've felt that and lived that, haven't you?
Well, it's easy being a former trustee.
And
you just opened up the door for us to invite you back when you're not so new on a job. So going back to the other guy who's new on a job, Sean Pearson, you've been involved in the community as well. How do you balance that with an impartial judgeship? I know you've been on some boards and everything, Clayton Jackson McGee, which, by the way, I mean, it's the whole purpose of that is justice. So I don't think it's a conflict. But how do you balance things like that?
Sure. Well, first and foremost, you turn to your judicial standards, regulations and whatnot. When you become an attorney, you ascribe to some professional responsibility, ethics obligations. When you become a judge, you continue to have to follow certain ethical obligations that are pretty similar, but they're increased. So you're absolutely correct. That, it has to be a balance. One of the ways is to remove myself from any kind of financial, fundraising type of activities. And that's not just with the one organization that I'm involved in on the board. That would just be any organization because this position carries a lot of trust, and that trust extends to perceptions as well as actual conflicts. You have to be more aware about how this position reflects on the community, because I am a representative of the state judiciary. So I think it's just a balance, and I unfortunately certain events I wouldn't be able to attend. Even to just say hi to some folks, such as the job.
So for any of those people who are listening to you, if you didn't respond or maybe you just, you know, gave a casual wave, we now can make it clear that you weren't being rude. You were being impartial.
No, well, that is very true. And that's really one thing that I always try to do when I make a decision from the bench or, you know, privately between two individuals or, you know, whatnot. I always try to explain where I'm coming from.
All right. Sean Flerke, I think I know the answer to this, but what was your proudest achievement as a judge?
Oh, boy. It was learning what I spoke about before, trauma-informed approach to judicial work, which involves being restorative and creating opportunities for folks to find their way forward. I was at the bike shop the other day, and a person followed me in and hugged me and thanked me for saving their life. And I'm sure I didn't, but I was part of a group of folks and processes that will open doors for people instead of closing doors.
Great. All right. We've been speaking with Sean Flerke, former judge for the 6th Judicial District of Minnesota, and now the president of the Duluth Superior Area Community Foundation, and Sean Pearson, Sean Flerke's successor on the bench for the 6th District. Thank you both for joining us, Sean's.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks, Robin, for having us.
Coming up, a field in Foxborough becomes the Great Northern Squash Fest. Welcome back to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. So the pandemic isn't quite over. You didn't need me to say that. But musical performances are back, at least in outdoor venues. And that works fine in our region because we have a lot of them. One going on right now combines music and camping. It's the Great Northern Squash Fest, as in the vegetable, not the crowds, and it started last night in Foxborough and goes on all weekend. The lineup includes, well, I'll let two organizers, who are also performers, tell us who's on the ticket. Joining us are Susie Applegren of the Potluck String Band and Tim Lukegeb of Black River Review. Welcome to Simply Superior, Susie and Tim.
Hey.
Thanks for having us.
So tell me, before we talk about the bands, why a squash? Were the pumpkins all taken? And by the way, do you know when pomegranate season is back? Because I'm a big fan and they're not here yet.
I don't know about pomegranates. This is the second annual Squash Fest. And I remember last year, Adam had a bumper crop of squash. Adam's the organizer. And he wanted to have some musicians together. And because of the bumper crop, he called it Squash Fest. But Tim, do you have another idea?
Nope, that's about it. We lined the front of the stage last year with all sorts of different cool-looking squashes. It was pretty fun.
Well, yeah. Squashes can also be gourds, right? Which could be musical instruments, right?
Good point.
Oh, yeah.
While we're talking about them, Susie, it says in your bio that you play the lele, and I'm assuming that means ukulele.
Yeah, I didn't specify online, but I play a banjo-shaped ukulele. It's just a small small banjo, but it's tuned like a ukulele. So that's my main instrument.
I did see that online, and that's one reason I was so smart in figuring out what it was. It's actually quite cute, and you can tell us. Frankly, I've never seen that before. But before you talk about your banjo, Tim, you also play a banjo.
I do, yeah. I play the 5-string banjo.
Have you ever picked up each other's? I'm thinking about it.
I don't think we've ever traded instruments. No, not yet. I mean, I'm sure it's bound to happen.
I'm sure it is. I can't believe I haven't forced the little banjo on you yet, Tim, but I bet it is bound to happen one of these days.
So tell us a little bit more about the little banjo. Whose idea was it?
Yeah, so the banjolele was actually a vaudeville instrument, and it was picked up because it has, mine in particular, has an open back. And so it would project further than a regular ukulele, but they liked the sound of the ukulele. So thus the banjolele was born in about the 1920s. And, you know, of course, didn't gain over popularity. That's why you haven't seen one before. the way I came to it was just because I was a vocalist and a piano player in my past. And when I joined my string band, they told me I had to learn how to play some strings, and pretty much everything else is.
What a requirement for a string band, right?
I know. They said a piano.
You could have been a mathematician or a physicist and said you knew string theory.
So that's how I came to the banjolele. It's really just for fun. Like I say, we're an 8-piece string band, so the banjolele is more for fun than anything.
Well, having had this much fun with the subject, I'm going to cue up a bit of you playing the banjolele that you were gracious enough to send us. We are now all sufficiently well-versed in the banjolele. We are speaking with Susie Applegren of the Potluck String Band and Tim Lukeb, and he does not play the lute. I suppose I'm not the first person to make that bad joke on your name, of Black River Review. Actually, I don't know that you don't play the lute. You are a string player, and a banjo is pretty close to other strings, right?
I'm sure I can figure it out. I've played all sorts of different strings throughout my life.
All right. So give us an idea who is performing. I mean, there is a whole long list, and of course it's going on from, it started last night, and it goes, for 2 more days. How about giving us the lineup and telling us a little bit about the groups?
Yeah, so last night we had Eldry Snow, the Lindela Brothers, and Buffalo Galaxy, three kind of very different and unique acoustic groups. As well as Chad Costner and Sugar on the Roof. There's two stages running all day. And what do we got going on Fridays?
Sure. Friday and Saturday are both jam-packed. Just to let you know, you can find the lineup on squashfest.org. But the Friday lineup has a mixture of both local musicians, Twin Cities musicians, and some Texas musicians. So just to name a few, we've got Danny Frank starting out the day. We've got Ian Alexi in the middle of the day. We've got Boxcar, a local band. We've got The Great Trumpet from Texas, String Dingers. We've got Nate Case, he's back from Germany. And we've got Dig Deep closing up the night.
And just for full transparency, we're recording this earlier in the week, so Thursday night hasn't quite happened yet. If indeed the Thursday night people don't show up, and they go to a pumpkin fest instead, we'll let you know next week. How about we hear something from one of Thursday night's scheduled performers?
Oh, yeah. So this is a track from Buffalo Galaxy out of Minneapolis, Minnesota.
was Time Machine by Buffalo Galaxy out of Minneapolis. We are speaking with Susan Applegren of the Potluck String Band and Tim Lukeb of Black River Review, who are organizers and performers in the Great Northern Squash Fest that is happening right now. Buffalo Galaxy, who we just heard, was a performer scheduled for last night, and it is going on, of course, today and through tomorrow, Saturday, in Foxborough. And where exactly in Foxborough?
So the address is 2632 East Coons Road. That's K-U-N-Z.
All right. And again, the web address?
Squashfest.org.
All right. So camping, you said this is the second year. Did you have camping last year? And whose idea was it to have both camping and a music performance?
Yeah, so last year everyone just camped out and we had two nights of music and it was a whole bunch of fun. And, you know, the festival grounds is Adam Stopey's house and his property. And so he started clearing out campsites and trails on his property, and it just kind of had a great layout for music.
Yeah, last year was very organically grown, just because there wasn't a lot of music going on. So
organically, I'm going to say pun intended, whether you meant that or not.
It works.
But seriously, is this something that came out of the pandemic? Because, you know, a year ago, we were approaching the end of a pandemic. We were hoping it was supposed to be the end. And we did think that at least outdoor venues would be safer, again, socially distanced. Was that the impetus for it, to your knowledge?
I would say yes. Adam Stopey is one of the members of the Feeding Leroy Band, and that's how Potluck String Band and Feeding Leroy Band got to know each other, was through the festival scene. And so, of course, in 2020, there weren't very many larger bluegrass festivals going on. And so Adam actually threw the festival on his grounds on a weekend when we would normally be in Winona at a festival. So, but it was such a hit last year that we couldn't help but repeat it again this year and make it even bigger and better. And I should mention that it's sponsored by Green Star Builds. That's Adam's business as well.
Mm-hmm. And is it all bluegrass or do we have a variety of genres?
Well, you'd have to stretch on the word bluegrass and put in and probably throw in some Americana, some folk. I think some good old-fashioned rock and roll as well. What did I miss, Tim?
I think you covered it all. We got some rock and roll. We got some folk. We got some singer-songwriters. We got some bluegrass. We got some Americana, you know. New Salty Dogs, which they jam out and they rock out. So it's, you know, just a great mix.
Okay, I'll take that as bluegrass, etc. And yes, you mentioned Danny Frank, who we've had on the show, and he's, I guess, goes in the singer-songwriter category, but he'll be happy to be a bluegrass performer as well.
It's a lot of friends, you know, it's a lot of our friends' bands from around the region. You know, Dig Deep is all the way from, you know, central Wisconsin, and lots of folks from the Twin Cities and friends from Texas coming up to play, so it's really kind of a testament to the festival scene and bands just getting to know each other from all over and traveling around and playing music together. And, you know, a lot of these sets turn into 5, 6, 7, 8, 10 people on stage all jamming out. So it's, and then the late night campfire jams too, is something Potluck String Band is great at encouraging, if you will. So there'll be a lot of music, a lot of picking, a lot of jamming. What else do we got going on, Susie? We got, you know, clean porta potties for folks. We've got camping. There's going to be some great food, and people are encouraged to bring their own food and drinks.
Yeah, we'll keep the fire stoked if it's cold, and we're selling ice if it's hot. So I think we've both sides of the weather spectrum covered.
All right. It sounds like you're prepared for every contingency. We are speaking with Tim Lukeb of Black River Review and Susie Applegren of the Potluck String Band, who are two of the organizers of the Great Northern Squash Fest going on now this weekend in Foxborough. So let's hear another selection, perhaps by one of your bands.
Go ahead, Tim.
Something by Black River Review, huh? It's always so hard to pick. Why don't we do the title track off of our last studio album that we put out in 2017? It's a song called Just Can't Win.
All right. You can't go wrong with Just Can't Win by the Black River Review.
It's all over.
That was Just Can't Win by the Black River Review, featuring Tim Lukeb on banjo, who's here with me, along with Susie Applegren of the Potluck String Band. They're among a multitude of bands at the Great Northern Squash Fest, going on now through Saturday in Foxborough. Information at squashfest.org. And how about one more group to take us out?
Let's have a track from the new Salty Dogs. They've got a new album that just came out in 2020 called Pecan Pecan. And one of my favorite tracks from that is called Pecan Pie.
Of course. And maybe you could have a little squash with that too, right?
Oh, yeah.
All right. We've been speaking with Susie Applegren of the Potluck String Band and Tim Lukeb of Black River Review. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
The long boat around the lake, or you can drive the highway by the landfill. Maybe I might, oh babe, what's right? Maybe I might go for instant thrill. Giddy up now. You can start to screw together parts. You can read the instruction manual. Maybe I might. Oh,
for instant thrill.
Maybe I might get back. Maybe I might. My heart tells me no. Go, the green light says go. But the struggle is short. Hey, I don't want to blow it all. Just so easy to preach and so hard.
Welcome back to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington, and I'm joined by Brooks Johnson of the Star Tribune's North Report team. Hello, Brooks.
Hi, Robin.
And our own Superior-based reporter for Wisconsin Public Radio News, Danielle Kading. Hi, Danny.
Hi, Robin.
So, Brooks, Duluth Mayor Emily Larson caused a stir the other week with her outsourcing of the city's tourism efforts to a firm in Minneapolis instead of the local tourism agency, Visit Duluth. Now Superior is rethinking its tourism approach?
Yes, but not in exactly the same way. So Superior Mayor Jim Payne wants to start fresh with their tourism marketing with a contract with Travel Superior ending at the end of this year. Payne's plan would create a public commission to spend hotel motel taxes to sell the city to tourists instead of leaving those decisions in the hands of a private board. So in terms of money, you know, Superior has collected nearly $500,000 in hotel motel taxes through July and is expecting a nearly $1 million haul in 2022. So right now, Travel Superior, which is part of the Superior Chamber, gets 70% of that money to spend on tourism marketing. The chamber is firmly opposed to Payne's plan. And right now, the last that happened was on Tuesday. The city council paused any further action on this for now.
Well, Danny, you've long covered Superior. Do you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, you know, the chamber president, Taylor Peterson, has said that room tax collections are up 90% in the last decade, saying that tourism has been growing each year except during the COVID-19 pandemic. And so they're basically like, if it's not broke, don't fix it right now. But, you know, there's been some concern, too, by some city councilors voiced about, well, if we form a tourism commission, there's fears that they would devote 100% of any revenue from those hotel motel taxes to fund a convention center. And the city council recently approved a contract with a Minneapolis firm to conduct a feasibility study of building a new convention center. And some of the public comment during the meeting revolved around opposition to this change and building a convention center not being a good enough reason to make this change right now, and wanting to get more of an understanding of what the parameters would be regarding any spending or contracting with other outside firms. I think there's some similar concerns related to what we saw in Duluth about how this would impact, you know, Travel Superior and local entities. But on the other side, they're saying that this is going to increase transparency and hopefully do more for the tourism industry by possibly looking at other firms to do this work.
All right. Well, thank you both. And however tourists get here, the air should be a little cleaner for them. Yes, Brooks?
Yes, thankfully, the Greenwood Fire in northeastern Minnesota, which is burning on about 25,000 acres of Superior National Forest, is about half contained. It's still burning in parts. There are many hot spots, many of them several feet below ground. But, you know, the hundreds of firefighters in the area have been helped by favorable weather, you know, a little bit of rain, cooler temps, less extreme heat and wind. So the fire in Lake County has run up about $15 million in firefighting costs, and they think they can get a full containment line around it in the coming days. But it could still burn and could be still be sending smoke into the air over the next month or two, perhaps until winter comes. But for now, clear skies. Enjoy them while you can.
All right. Well, Danny, I said this one before, from fire to water. What's the latest on the water level of Lake Superior?
Yeah, well, for the first time in 7 years, water levels on Lake Superior are pretty much on par with the lake's long-term average after we've seen a string of record highs. In August, the average water levels on Lake Superior dropped less than an inch to 602.17 feet, and that matches the long-term average for the first time since April of 2014. And it was nearly a foot below water levels in August of last year. You know, we typically see seasonal declines and fluctuations where the lake rises in spring and then ends up falling in the fall. But this decline has been driven by abnormally dry to extreme drought conditions across the Lake Superior Basin and pretty much what's fueling the wildfires that Brooks was talking about. And so, you know, researchers say that this change is a pretty significant shift for people living around the lake. You know, after we saw a period of record-setting water levels beginning in 2013, now in recent years in 2019 and 2020, we saw monthly records, if not all-time records, across the Great Lakes. So people on Lake Superior should see some relief, you know, from flooding and erosion that has damaged infrastructure as we've seen high water levels. And so, you know, in the near future, at least, we're not expected to see any of those record-setting water levels, and Lake Superior is expected to hover around average. Over the long term, that's harder to predict.
All right. Well, back to the never-ending pandemic, because it never went away. Do I understand correctly that Wisconsinites have been drinking their way through it?
Yes, they have been. We saw an increase in state excise taxes on alcohol during the year that just ended in June 30th of this year, where those taxes increased 17% over the $63 million, roughly, that they bought in the prior year. And that increase is the largest percentage jump that we've seen since 1972, if the preliminary findings hold. So, you know, basically what this indicates is that people were super stressed over the last year with their job situations or school or daycare, and that they were looking for a cold one to, you know, help take the edge off. But, you know, this has been a concern in Wisconsin, which studies have shown is, you know, susceptible to binge drinking. A 2019 study by UW-Madison found 24% of Wisconsin adults engage in binge drinking. And, you know, all of the health concerns that result from consuming too much alcohol, especially for women and young children. And so the question that researchers have right now is the drinking going to subside as the COVID-19 pandemic fades away? And so I think that's yet to be seen. For now, at least, we can see from those excise taxes on alcohol that people are drinking quite a bit more in the last year.
All right. I guess not terribly surprising. Well, we've been speaking with Danielle Kading, the Superior Base reporter for WPR News. Thank you, Danny.
Thanks, Robin.
And Brooks Johnson of the Star Tribune's North Report team. Thank you, Brooks.
Thanks, Robin.
You can read the stories by Brooks and the Star Tribune's entire Twin Ports Bureau at www.startribune.com/northreport, and be sure to subscribe to their local newsletter. And that's about it for this edition of Simply Superior. This week's show falls in the middle of the High Holy Days on the Jewish calendar. One of the members of that community is University of Wisconsin Superior educator Danny Frank, who is also one of the featured acts at the Great Northern Squash Festival. So we leave you with his prayerful and hopeful performance at the Twin Ports Vigil for the victims of the Tree of Life Synagogue tragedy in 2018. I'm Robin Washington. As always, stay safe, everyone.
Sagoy el goy cherev, lo yilmadu od milchama. Lo yisagoy el goy cherev, lo yilmadu od milchama. Eyo, oh, eh, eh.